Lost in the Middle, America's Political Orphans, Episode 6. How the Democrats swapped the headquarters of Walmart to the Republicans for a fleet of Maine lobstermen. The never-ending realignment of American politics.
Oh, happy day.
Well, I bet we have you totally confused in just the first 15 seconds. Those are three brief audio clues to explain where American politics have shifted dramatically. And one thing you can count on, they're going to shift again. And often caught in the squeeze will be America's restless political orphans.
No matter what you do as a political party, you're going to make some portion of your coalition angry. Because we are a giant transcontinental nation, diverse in all sorts of ways, and there is no way to govern in a way that makes everyone happy.
That's Real Clear Politics editor Sean Trend.
So one group comes into the coalition, it makes some other group in that coalition angry, they go to the other party, their joining up makes some member of that party angry, and so they leave, and it's just a story that goes on.
Shortly after the 2022 elections, the Blue Dogs, a coalition of moderate Democrats, gathered in a Capitol Hill conference room, a group more focused on national security and fiscal discipline than the average Democrat. In an unusual twist these days, their re-election campaigns often boast of collaboration with Republicans. So where did that Blue Dog label come from? The core group of these Democrats came from places like Mississippi, Georgia, and Oklahoma. Southern Democrats were said to be so loyal they would even vote for a yellow dog before they'd vote for any damned Republican. But then the Democratic Party came to be dominated by coastal liberals, and these centrist Democrats were frozen out by the lefty leadership. One Texas Democrat moaned in another tale of how this name came about. When they left the dogs out in the cold, they'd turn blue. But soon the Blue Dogs got their bite back. Yeah, I know, speaking of cliches, when a proud member of the pack, more cliches and still more lazy writing, Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton's centrist politics got him elected president.
I, William Jefferson Clinton, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
Congratulations.
When Obama got elected, their ranks swelled to 70 members, the deciding votes for a signature health care plan. But by 2022, pummeled by progressives and Republicans, the once feisty bunch was anything but ferocious. So in that meeting in 2022, in a small conference room, they only needed a very small conference room because now there were just 13, not 70, the argument was about embracing a new name, from the Majority Report radio show.
The Blue Dog Caucus, which has traditionally been like sort of like the most conservative caucus in the Democrats, has fractured. Some of them, the women in this group, wanted to rebrand the Blue Dogs as the Common Sense Coalition because the Blue Dogs, that name sort of derived from when they were sort of more a little Dixiecrat-ish. Mm-hmm. They weren't quite Dixiecrats, but they were pretty close. And apparently, like, sort of people still think of it as a Southern boys club.
No.
Historically, the Blue Dogs were Southern and were male, but now its leaders were from New York, Alaska, and Washington State. And now there were nearly as many women as men. How about the Common Sense Caucus they proposed? Well, how did that proposal go? Want to know why it's hard to get anything done in Washington? Six people stormed out of the room to start their own organization, and seven Blue Dogs were now left behind, lonely and proudly defiant. What the hell? You can't even get 13 people to stick together in Congress these days. When I was in Congress, the moderate Republicans were called the Tuesday Group, and we used to meet for lunch on Wednesday, which sort of tells you everything you need to know. If you're lost in the middle, imagine what it's like to try to represent the middle in today's Congress. Al Fromm knows something about the transformation in Congress. Along with Bill Clinton, he founded the Centrist Democratic Leadership Coalition, which poof, has now all but vanished.
At one point, if you looked at the most conservative Democrat, the most liberal Republican would have been much more liberal than the most conservative Democrat. Now, I think the most conservative Democrat is on the spectrum is much more liberal than the most liberal Republican. So essentially what you have is a more ideological parties.
And that means politicians in the middle get squeezed out and voters in the middle feel ignored. Here's a Clinton campaign commercial celebrating the name of his hometown, Hope, Arkansas.
I was born in a little town called Hope, Arkansas, 3 months after my father died.
I remember that old two-story house where I lived with my grandparents. They had very limited incomes.
There's a main street. There's a courthouse. It's just your typical small southern town.
Hal Bass is a retired political science professor at OBU in Arkansas.
Our high school team would play Hope, and I'd go down there for the high school ball games. And certainly Friday night is a big night in the fall in Hope. The town unites around the high school football team. It's, you know, kind of like Cheers. Everybody knows your name.
The interstate now runs through Hope, Arkansas, so it's grown a bunch since Bill Clinton's days. And when he ran for governor, his politics matched the state's perfectly and the Arkansas congressional delegation.
This was Blue Dog Country here. If you were going to get elected, you had to show you were in sync with your constituents.
Hope, Arkansas is about 8,500 people. George H. Bush's hometown, just about half that size. But if Clinton grew up in lower middle class, the Bushes lived much of the time in an oceanfront mansion in Kennebunkport, Maine. Here's the former president with Oprah Winfrey.
Back in 1902, Mr. Walker, my grandfather, my namesake, built this house, and we love it.
There's a 9-bedroom main house, a cluster of smaller guest cottages, a tennis court, and a pool.
James Melchers, a professor at the University of Maine in Farmington.
Kennebunkport used to be the quintessential Republican town. So the Bushes were very loved in the community. They'd been there for a long time. But Kennebunkport is not Maine. Kennebunkport is extremely wealthy. It's part of the old silk stocking, high education, Republican kind of town.
Main Street in Kennebunkport is more saltwater taffy than Tiffany's, the kind of place where you can buy gummy candy shaped like lobsters and one of those vacation t-shirts that makes you wonder 6 months later, why in the hell did I buy that thing? That's the sound on Main Street when the Bushes came back to the summer White House. The town and the tourists all showed up to wave. But now you're probably asking yourself, why this trip down memory lane? Because now we're going to tell you how the quintessential Yankee Republicans have all disappeared in New England. Case in point, Kennebunkport sits in York County, Maine. And in 2020, Joe Biden won the city and the county with 55%. That's right. George Bush could not get elected today in his own hometown. And as for Bill Clinton in Hope, Arkansas, well, here's his ideological soulmate, DNC founder Al Fromm.
How frustrated is your old boss with the progressives?
You mean President Clinton?
Yeah.
We talked a while ago and he said, you know, I don't think I could win in Arkansas now. So
it wouldn't be close, frankly. In 2016, Hillary Clinton got trounced.
We can say ABC News can project that Donald Trump will win the state of Arkansas. 6 electoral votes there, of course, as we said, Hillary Clinton was the first lady of Arkansas for many years. But that has been a Republican state in part because of the trend throughout the South, Democrats losing those working class whites.
And in 2020, Trump won Arkansas with 62% of the vote. And in Clinton's home county, 66% of the vote.
Oh, happy day.
How did this all happen? Well, we have to talk about God and about religion first. The Republicans ripped the South from Democrats by leaning in heavily on evangelicals. And it started with someone who knew Kennebunkport very well, George W. Bush.
Preston Bush was a Republican liberal senator from Connecticut that was George's father, had been involved in a lot of liberal causes, was a quintessential Rockefeller moderate Republican, and George was very much that way. In a way, his son wasn't. His son grasped populism more. You know, he said, well, how are you different from your dad? And he says, my dad grew up in New England and I grew up in West Texas. So, you know, that's kind of a passing of generations there also.
And that embrace of cultural issues turned a patchwork of red states in the South into a solid block of electoral votes, including Arkansas, which was one of the last ones to flip to the GOP. Hal Bass, one more time.
The cultural conservatism, I think, is largely a reflection of our abiding rural character. And it was the evangelical shift that I think largely accounts for that transformation.
Yep, we're talking about you, New England. Peter Blute is a longtime Boston radio host and an old buddy from my days in Congress. We shared a small, battered lifeboat together in Congress, Republicans in strongly Democratic districts. He was a Republican from the Boston area. I was from Madison, Wisconsin. Republicans, he says, lost New England in part because of religion.
The New England culture religiously is to, you go to your church on the weekend or Saturday, whatever. You go back to work on Monday. Keep it to yourself.
And up the road from Boston on 993 is New Hampshire, based on polling, the least religious state in the country.
We saw the Republican Party embrace evangelical Christianity to a hyper degree. You saw this sort of George W. Bush swagger, if you will, this Texas swagger, where he was doing really well in the state of Texas. But that's really when we saw the Republican Party here really devolve.
St. Anselm College political director Neil Levesque.
It's not that we don't have churches. It's not that, you know, people don't pray to God. It's that people don't tell you that they do. So when politicians or a political party is really expounding on, you know, religion and why they're doing things based upon the Bible or one religion or another, I think it probably turns off voters permanently.
When George H. Bush was president, there were Republican members in the House in New England, in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine, Connecticut, even Vermont and Rhode Island. Today, there are zip, nada, not a single one. Democrats have fared slightly better in the South, but really not very much. And those who survive are not old-school blue dogs, but largely black members of Congress elected in large cities. Republicans fared better in the South as its economy changed. In Arkansas, for example, in the Bill Clinton era, the state had little industry and its lifeblood was small towns and farming. Now there are national powerhouses here. Hal Bass.
I think Northwest Arkansas in particular has blossomed economically, transformed. I described it earlier back in the post-war era as poor hill country folks. When you got people like Walmart, Sam Walton operating out of Bentonville, a major trucking concern, J.B. Hunt, you've got Tyson and poultry production. I think you've seen Arkansas's industrial and agriculture industrial sector being transformed. And again, to the benefit of Republicans.
And add in huge retirement communities with snowbirds fleeing the Midwest, and according to Hal, usually with a Republican bent. In New England, the story's a little more complicated, where in-migration has tilted it blue. Commuters from Boston and New York added white, highly educated professionals. The days of the romantic maple syrup farmer, largely a memory from old Courier Knives prints.
This podcast is brought to you by the American Property Owners Alliance. Our country recognizes home ownership as one of the best ways to build wealth and stable communities. But over the years, support for home ownership has dwindled, and our leaders have lost sight of its value. We're working to change that. The American Property Owners Alliance is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that holds our leaders accountable to safeguard homeowners and communities. Visit PropertyOwnersAlliance.org to learn more and find out how you can join our efforts.
Remember that sound from the beginning of this episode? That's the sound of a shoe cobbler. And at one time when you slid on a pair of shoes in a store, chances are they came from Maine. But free trade, linked in the minds of those workers with George H. Bush, destroyed those companies.
A lot of northern New England got clobbered by free trade. The coal hands, especially shoes. We used to be one of the biggest shoe manufacturers anywhere. Cole Haan, gone. Bass, gone. You go down the list of those things.
Now, here's where it gets even more complicated in Maine. Maine has two congressional districts. The coast, where Kenny Bunkport is, swung hard to Biden and has a Democratic member of Congress. But the interior of the state became Trump country because he was the guy who punched back with steep tariffs, hitting China and Southeast Asia, today's shoe manufacturing centers. Here's a PBS story about one of those cities and a one-time mill worker and a city council member.
In 2016, Donald Trump won the second congressional, which includes Millinocket, making him the first Republican since 1988 to gain an electoral vote here. He won the district again this year.
The Democrats, why did they lose strength there in your part of the world?
I think they lost touch with the people. The Democrat Party, growing up was seemed to be more for the working class, and I think it's kind of turned now. I think now the Democrats have lost touch with the average person, and President Trump has brought the Republican Party, turned it right around. It's always been said there's two Maines, and I firmly believe there is two Maines.
You know that feeling when you walked off a tilt-a-whirl when you were a kid and everything was spinning around? Well, we're going to make you climb back on that ride just one more time. And so while New England's congressional district and its state legislatures are solidly blue, its governors are not. In recent years, it's been overrun by Republicans. New Hampshire Republican John Sununu is arguably the second most popular governor in the country. His next-door neighbor, Republican Governor Phil Scott, in Vermont, in the land of Bernie Sanders, was recently reelected to his fourth term.
He's a guy who's worked in the construction business. That's what his background has been. He drives a dirt track NASCAR type cars that he builds himself. He's like a regular guy that people have known, and his family's been in the community for a long time.
Dr. Alan Iceman is originally a New York City doctor who decades ago joyfully moved to more laid back Vermont. He's a loyal Democratic voter, but he likes having an old fashioned Republican keeping the Democratic legislature from reaching too deeply into his wallet.
And people like that he's a very fiscally responsible, straightforward person who doesn't want to raise taxes unnecessarily, which the state legislature in its Democratic way sometimes has tried to be more spending oriented than Phil Scott has wanted them to be. So I think that's what people like about him, is they don't want their taxes to go up. They want an appropriate explanation for how you're going to use the money. And he's always kind of held people to the task of saying, if we don't have the money, we can't really do this. We can't just tax our way out of these problems.
Before he left office last year, Republican Governor Charlie Baker was the most popular governor in America. And Pete Blute says it's that same fiscal dynamic.
This is the thing. You need fiscal sanity in a legislative chamber and a governorship. And the Republicans in New England were able to bring that. They reassured the average person that even though I might not agree with Sununu or Weld 100%, I know there'll be a backstop, a fiscal backstop to keep things under control. And many, many tax increases were vetoed by those moderate governors. And the average person in these states said, thank you.
But as we've told you, the national GOP has abandoned that focus on fiscal issues. Want to know how weird it is in Massachusetts? When Charlie Baker, America's most popular governor, refused to put up a picture of Donald Trump in his office, at the state GOP headquarters, its leadership refused to put up a picture of its own Republican governor.
It's no surprise that the two parties at this point have become further and further away from the middle. And so what have voters done? They have reacted in a way that a lot of the voters that you find that are undeclareds are proud of the fact that they are undeclareds and that they are focused on the person rather than the party. And a lot of people are disgusted by both parties at this point. And so that's what they become. So again, the largest voting bloc in New Hampshire is the undeclareds.
That's Neil again.
The Republican Party has started to die on the vine, and it hasn't reacted by saying, okay, what are we going to do here to start winning again, to increasing that number? Instead, it said, we're great, we're Republicans, we're losing, but we're still Republicans and we're members of this tribe, and we feel good about it. Well, that's great, but you're not going to win elections.
And now let's have some more fun and slap around the Democrats for a while. You know, the Democrats have fixated on demographics for some time. The theory goes, young people today are Democrats, the suburbs are turning more purple, the percentage of older white voters is shrinking, and voila, the Democrats will rule the world. Elaine Komarek was part of the Clinton Blue Dog wave, and she warns Republicans, those headlights, they're heading right at you.
I think demographics are destiny. The problem is that it's glacial. You know, demographic movements are really, really glacial. There will be a point when we wake up in Texas and say, oh my God, Texas is blue. You and I may not be around, okay? And the reason you know it's going to happen is that there is such an age divide.
In 2002, prominent Democratic strategist Rui Tejera made that exact argument in a book called The Emerging Democratic Majority. It was a wildly popular book and celebrated breathlessly in the opinion columns in the New York Times and the Washington Post. But in the end, the conclusions were flawed. Well, who says that? Who has the audacity? The guy who wrote the book. His models were based on the idea that Democrats would hold on to all the voting blocks it had in 2000, but it would capture, for example, the surge of Hispanic voters. Except the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Rui Tejera is a demographer and a Democratic strategist.
So basically now you have the people who run the Democratic Party, the people who run associated institutions, people who run the nonprofits, the advocacy groups, the foundations, and of course, even in academia, we see this in spades. They're pretty left and they're pretty culturally out of touch with the ordinary American. And that really helps define the party brand. It just does. I mean, Democrats are associated with a whole range of boutique positions and obsessions that just don't correspond to what most ordinary Americans, particularly working class Americans, care about. Yeah, the Blue Dogs are a victim of, you know, basically the desertion of primarily the white working class from the Democratic Party.
Case in point, Hispanic voters are disproportionately blue-collar workers, and perhaps more than any other group in the country, were clobbered by the COVID shutdown imposed by the Biden White House.
I think people underestimate the extent it pissed off a lot of working class voters, particularly, you know, especially Hispanics who tend to be low-level service workers, that the economy was kept closed for so long in so many places. And Republicans really benefited from that. So in other words, it's sort of, if Hispanics have a presupposition as seeing Democrats as being the party that's on their side and cares more about them, that's being undercut by a lot of these other issues that are coming up that are tilting the Democratic brand away from sort of the wheelhouse of the normie Hispanic working class voter, to the point where there's now a permission structure for them to vote Republican more so than they used to.
So where does that leave America's political middle? One more ingredient in the stew that is American politics in 2024. You can argue about how big that segment is, but you can clearly tell how frustrated they are with America's extreme political leaders.
Yeah, I wouldn't belabor that point too much, I guess, about how big or small today's middle is relative to the past. But I think we could fairly say it's substantial, and they're kind of pissed off, basically. There's always been a middle that's felt dissatisfied, but they're now more dissatisfied, and it's a bigger political problem. It's a bigger problem for the country because of the way the parties have become so polarized and their inability to address some of the issues that Americans care most about and to be more in the sort of cultural center.
We're told it frustrates former President Bill Clinton because his whole campaign and his entire congressional strategy was based on straddling the middle. But there's not much room for it in national politics these days. Here's the one-time leader of his posse, Al Fromm, one more time.
I'm sure he's concerned about it because
He understands that, to win, Democrats have to, and to hold the Congress, we have to win in districts that would ordinarily go Republican. And you do that by winning swing voters who are in the center, and you can't do it if you take progressive positions. I think the Republican moderates face a more difficult problem than the conservative Democrats.
By now you're wondering, wasn't there a third clue? Let me see, there was the gospel singers, then there was a Maine cobbler, and wasn't there a third? Here it is now. That's the spinning wheel on a game show. No one knows where it's going to land. Not Vanna on Wheel of Fortune, not on a Midway Carnival, and not in American politics. We can only tell you it never stops spinning. And the lost middle, bewildered as always, frustrated with the extremes, just now more so than ever before. So take away one lesson from these stories. Anyone who tells you how people in California, in Mississippi, in Montana, in Nebraska, in Pennsylvania will vote 20 years from now, they really don't have a clue.
It's just a story that goes on. As a matter of fact, a big picture thing to keep in mind is that if you go back to the 1850s, to the founding of the Republican Party, the parties have won the presidency exactly 50% of the time. It's almost as if our elections are governed by coin flips. And the reason is that you just cannot create a dominant party in this country. Because we're so diverse, there's so many factions. It's just always going to balance out in the long run.
So if the political chaos around you makes you feel frustrated by the current political zeitgeist, if you're part of America's bewildered 71 million common sense voters, you can count on one thing in American politics. The headwinds are always shifting. So hang on tight to your principles. They're soon going to shift around and be at your back.
And if when you're running, it seems the wind is always in your face, just keep on running, 'cause the wind is bound to change. Hold on with all your strength.
Here's the team behind Lost in the Middle. Executive producer Jeff Mayers. Producer Todd Elbaugh. Creative team Claudia Luz and Tony Wood. Edited by Aaron Zummers. Music by Brett William. Production at Civic Media. And a quick thanks to our partners at the American Property Owners Alliance. If you like this episode of Lost in the Middle, please remember to subscribe to our podcast. And if you enjoyed it, please tell your friends and pals.
Keep on dancing with the one who brought you. Keep running, 'cause the wind is bound to change.